Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, and I'm joined today with Adam Matthew Stoker.
Ooh, you're getting close. So I got to tell
Am
you.
I?
Okay.
Okay.
You're getting close. So my twin brother also has a middle name that starts with M.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a little brother that also has a middle name that starts with M. And you nailed my little brother's middle name today.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
We're getting there. I didn't go quite off the reservation this time, like last time with Mildred. So
yeah.
I felt like I'm going to play it safe, you know? I
This
figured
one
this is
had
a
a
shtick
higher
that can
chance.
last like 6 or 7 episodes, not like 607 episodes. So,
Well, if you keep guessing Mildred or something like that, this is an infinite content glitch that you found.
well, this is true. And I think we'll see that reflected in the loss of viewership and listenership. So, man, we've not done this in a while. Man,
I've
I feel
missed
like
you.
it's been forever. Wow, that's the nicest thing you've ever said.
Sincerely. Yeah, I've missed you.
This is, you're rusty, obviously, because you're
You're
being
waiting for
nice.
the punchline.
Yeah. No, we haven't recorded in a while. We sort of did a bunch towards the beginning of the year, and then we had a couple of travels and stuff, and I've been busy, and we just haven't recorded in a while. But I figured it was time for us to do like a one-on-one, like no guests today, just you and me, waxing lyrical, and we'll see where it goes. I know you've got a topic. I've got a pretty cool Stu's News, I think. So, like, let's you want to jump in?
Let's do it. Let's get the rust off.
All right. You got the jingle ready? How
Of
rusty are we?
course I do, Stuart. Of
All right.
course I
Sure.
do. Hold
Let's
on.
do
Did
it.
I share the sound? I didn't.
I'm
Let's
not
see.
hearing anything.
Tell me. Well, I didn't press play yet. Here we go.
Yeah, we got it.
All right. Yeah, see, I'm not that rusty.
You know, Adam, I didn't miss it, but, is it longer than it used to be? I'm not sure. You know, there's someone that said they wanted to keep the rap jingle, the English rap jingle. That
I
was one
did
of the
see
comments.
that.
Was it Nate that said that on Spotify?
Yeah.
Someone did. Yeah. It was kind of weird, but
You know, I went back
anyway.
and listened to that episode over the last week, and I got to say, I did enjoy the British rap more listening back to it than I had before. It was fun to me for some reason.
Okay. Good. I'm glad you could humor yourself, if not the audience. That's really why we do this. This is a very self-indulgent show. It's fine. Well, today's Stu's News, I got to tell you, man, I think, you know, everyone remembers like that November when ChatGPT came out, right? And it was a watershed moment and everyone was like, oh, AI is a real thing and it's actually useful, right? That's what happened like 3 years ago now. I think we're right there where it's happening again. You know, we've heard a lot about Claw Code, right? Which, or Malt Book and all this stuff that was going on a couple of weeks ago. I don't think that's the mainstream thing. I think there's a lot of nerdy folks like myself that are out there buying Mac Minis and doing things that it does require a little bit of technical ability, right? My team here, Visit Myrtle Beach, are on the bandwagon, fully on the bandwagon of Claude Cowork.
Okay.
And so Claude's been out for a long time. And it's a regular LLM, just like ChatGPT or Gemini, right? But they've added this functionality to Claude called Cowork. And I've been asking my team to sort of give me an analogy for what that is, right? Diane on our team, she heads up the marketing. She was the first to really embrace it. And she's now gotten the rest of the team to do it. The way she described it to me earlier was it's like, you know, ChatGPT is sort of a conversation, but you're having to sort of do the things. And it's good to help you think. It's good to help you sort of even write a little bit. But Claude Cowork, it actually goes and does the work. So from my perspective, it's like I had a sort of dumb robot that I could give specific one-time instructions to, and it would come back and do it half well. And then I'd have to say, no, 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 I meant it this way. And then I'd have to do that 3 or 4 times to get the end product, right? But it was very procedural. It was very conversational. What Claude Cowork does is it actually integrates with my workflow. Like I can give it access and permission to stuff from like box folders and stuff on my desktop to my email, to my calendar, to any product you can imagine. I can give it access to, and I can actually collaborate with it like a human. I can actually say, hey, we're trying to solve this problem, and it can use all of my stuff to help me solve the problem. And it can actually go run and do that in parallel. So an example of one we just used yesterday, we had a board meeting, and we've just restructured our organization. And so the board meetings are sort of new. We're introducing a lot of things. And so we're having a fundamental conversation about who is our customer, what are the KPIs we should be targeting, what is our purpose as a DMO. And we're evolving that a little bit. And we had surveyed board members and asked them to give us their thoughts on some of these sort of concepts about why do we exist? What would you like to see more from us and things like this? So we had all this tons and tons of emails that we boiled down with, normally with ChatGPT, we take that and we turn it into a summary document, right? That's what ChatGPT could do. Well, we took the summary document, we gave all our reports, we gave Claude Cowork access to all our reports. We gave it some other context. We sort of said, here's what we're thinking we want to do for a presentation to our board. And it just went and did it all. It asked them a lot of really smart, insightful, clarifying questions about, well, have you considered this? But it created on its own this really powerful presentation, soup to nuts, that we really didn't have to touch. And it was really strategic. It was really deliberate. And we've done this like with a dozen different projects. Like Melissa, our analytics person who's been on this show before, she had one where we've wanted for a long time to be able to, on a regular cadence, push out some really dynamic and interesting data with commentary to our stakeholders. But the problem is it would take so long to synthesize into analyze into proof and all this stuff. So she did this this week where she went and grabbed like 20, 30 different charts that all say different things, gave that to Claude Cowork and said, hey, we want to create a presentation that's formatted nicely, that has insights, that has commentary and notes in it, and has a narrative. And it went and did it all. And it was great, like 99.9. I'm not talking like the 80% that ChatGPT is. It was 99.9% there. And we tweaked a couple of things. But along the way, it's asking questions like, do you want this presentation, because we're going to record it, to be 10 minutes or 5 minutes and stuff like that. So this has really gone from being like an augmentation to us as individuals to now we have extra employees on our team. And you can stack these up as well. So you can create sort of supervisory roles, and you can create like the ex subject matter expert roles. And it's persistent too. So theoretically, we could go create like these sort of agents that are now media planners or social media strategists or copywriters or whatever, and they can tap into what they call skills, and you can actually train skills yourself. There's a bunch of pre-worked skills, but if I have a specific workflow within my, like, let's say we use Asana as our project management system, we can create like a project manager role as an agent in Cowork that almost acts like our traffic manager. And it can actually add the projects and manage it and see the timelines. And we can set up procedures so that it's looking at that every day and seeing where the missed deadlines are and actually communicating that out. Like, this is, to say this is a game changer is an understatement. I mean, I literally just, I think it's going to unleash a small team to be able to do the work of 100 people. Like this, it's that fundamental.
So I have a couple questions and then I've got a comment. So I want to start with my questions. So the one question that I, or at least the most important question that I feel like I have to start is, this all sounds incredible, but one of the unanswered questions is, how much token usage does a Claude Cowork agent use when you just cut it loose and let it do a variety of responsibilities? So when you're building this board presentation, for example, what's the cost of that?
I mean, we have, I think Diana's been a super user and she's hit a little bit, but I mean, we're all on the $20 subscription, right? And 90% of what we're doing hasn't gone above that threshold so
So we're
far.
talking nominal token
Oh,
usage.
it's nothing. I think the next level up is like $100 a month, but I don't see us getting above that, because Eventually, we could. Theoretically, if we scaled this infinitely, I think we could. And if
Well,
I
hold
was
on.
doing a lot of coding, I think if I was coding websites and stuff like that, that would probably be where it would change. But right now, we at $20 a month, I've got like the best assistant I've ever had.
So there's a difference, and I know you know this, but I'm just making sure that the audience is kind of following along with us, that you've got monthly subscription fees, which is that $20 a month. But then if you use a certain amount of tokens, there's an additional cost that would be applied. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. But you can actually use this to be smart about it because you can tell go back and forth. If you're just asking simple questions, don't use Cowork, right? You just use the regular Claude or Gemini or ChatGPT or whatever. But if you're doing sort of consecutive, complex, multi-step work, then you use Cowork, right? But you can also do it in a way that minimizes the token use. You can tell it that. You can say, hey, estimate what this is going to take from a token perspective and estimate what my usage would be in a month. So you can actually like it's not dumb, right? And
Yeah.
this is the first time I can say that about AI. It's not dumb.
You and I have been waiting for this moment for a long time, I think, and we've talked about, we've debated a lot over the last year. How soon is it going to happen? And then, what's the adoption going to be? All that kind of stuff. But we've talked a lot about the importance of going from tactician to strategist. And if I'm hearing what you're saying correctly, and I haven't gotten in and tried Claude Cowork. So we've done some work with OpenClaw, but Claude Cowork, I'm actually going to dive in as soon as we're done with this episode, it sounds like. But the thing that I'm hearing is that a really smart strategist using Claude Cowork no longer has the technical barriers to tactical fulfillment that they used to. So, for example, I understand strategy. But I am not the guy who goes in and figures out how to run Meta ads within the Meta platform because there's a knowledge barrier there for me. You're saying that now it's gotten to the point where Claude Cowork, I could assign it to become the Meta ads expert tactician, and I can say, here's the outcomes that I'm looking for on this campaign. Here's the strategy. Go execute and continue to optimize for conversion or whatever the KPI is that I assign it. And you're saying it can go do that, which empowers a strategist to be infinitely more valuable at that point.
Yeah, and to be clear, we haven't gotten to that point yet, right? We're not unleashing it on deployment of ad yet, right? Now, will we at some point? Maybe, but I think right now what we're doing is sort of it's the 85% of work that happens all the way up until deployment, right?
Yeah.
So we're still having the human hit the button at the end, but everything between ideation and strategy to deployment, all of the work that has to be done in between can be done with Claude Cowork, and it can tie to every system. So think about this: it now has all the knowledge you have or have ever had or have access to for every decision it makes. That's insane.
Stuart, it's insane. But I want to talk specific because this is an important moment, I think, for everybody that listens to this show, everybody that's in the destination marketing industry. What does this mean for the value of the destination marketer? Because there's two ways this can go. People can look at this and say, oh my gosh, my job is at risk. Or people can look at this and say, oh my gosh, I can do so much more in the time that I have available. So, how should destination marketers be thinking about this?
So I'll give you a specific case that we just had earlier today when we were having a conversation. We have membership dues, and then we have what we call AMP, Accelerated Marketing Programs, which is a way essentially sponsorships and investments that a hotel or restaurant or attraction can make in us, right? And historically, that's been very transactional, right? They can buy higher placement on our website, they can be in specific pages, they can get into our brochure, our printed piece brochures. So it's transactional. They're buying marketing exposure from us. It's no secret that our website traffic is decreasing, right? And at some point that goes to close to zero, or it's certainly significantly reduced from what it is. Let's say best case scenario, it's 50% of what it was 2 years from now. It'll probably be less than that. the value we're driving, the perceived value we're driving to our members is going down at a time when we're having to raise our rates to continue to maintain operations, right? So that's a bad train wreck that's coming very fast, right? So we've got to think about, well, how do we continue to provide value in this new world, and so we can maintain our revenue streams. And so some of what we're talking about is, well, what are some old school tactics that used to work really well, like looking at like printed maps and things like that, you know, going more offline, non-digital stuff and selling ads in those. But some of it is, how do we provide value in different ways? Some of that is information, insights, education, stuff like that. Like, do we almost become an agency for some of these guys, or at least a facilitator? And how does this kind of stuff help? So the example that we were talking about earlier was, you know, Melissa and our team is creating this new report that she's going to be able to create a 5-10 minute presentation. A week ago, if we tried to do this, it would have probably taken her 2 or 3 days to create that presentation, to make sure it was good, to actually put it together, right? So that's probably not something we could do on a regular basis, to take two full days of labor from one of our top strategists to just communicate to our members wouldn't be a good investment. But if she can now do that in 5 minutes, right, which she can, then we can scale like we've never been able to do before. So now the value we can provide, she could do a weekly or a monthly or whatever complete market update, and it's going to take a, let's say, let's be generous, let's say it's less than 30 minutes. She can create a complete market update that not only can we provide to our members, but we can provide to our other stakeholders, our elected officials, and other people. So I think it's going to allow us to be more present and perceived to be more valuable to every one of our stakeholders.
Well, and you'll be spending time on the things that actually are valuable as opposed to the 2 days of research that led to the valuable thing that was
Yes,
presented.
correct.
I think that's such a game changer
The
for destination marketing
laborious piece of it,
professionals.
right? The hard, the actual labor time that goes into this stuff is going to close to zero. Our cost to produce really complicated, valuable stuff is going to close to zero. And so we can do that on a scale we've never done, and we can even interface with our members in a way we've never done before. We can automate communications. We can get them actually plugged into our systems in a way we haven't. I mean, we're just beginning to think about what this opportunity is. We don't know yet because it just came up across our desk.
Strategic thinkers in our industry are going to be in more demand than they ever have been, based on what I'm hearing.
And I think it's also access, right? Here's the other piece of this. This is sort of related, but a little bit different, is, okay, where's the attention going, right? If let's say a website traffic's going down because consumers are changing how they plan and book. Well, those people are going to, the consumer is going to ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini or whatever. Our individual members, individual hoteliers, individual restaurants, individual other folks, they don't have the manpower, the resources, the capabilities to be on top of that, right? But we can scale that. So, like, let's use ChatGPT as an example. ChatGPT now offers ads, right? But it's really hard to get on ads. They're being really selective. The chances of a hotel, individual hotelier being on ChatGPT ads in the next 3 to 6 months is close to zero. The chances of a major DMO being on there in the next 3 months is pretty high. And if we position that well, that's what we start monetizing, right? Because we're still monetizing attention, it's just not on our platform. So we become the intermediary in that. We also help them with their content, and how does that content get to the LLMs, you know? So our role shifts in terms of what value we provide to the individual entities.
I gotta say, Stuart, today's Stu's News, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. You've had some real disappointing Stu's News in the past, but today was really good.
Yeah, other than the jingle, which continues to disappoint, right?
You, yes,
Yes.
disappoints you.
My message to everyone in the destination, to you, Adam, to your mom. That's it. That's the destination.
Shout out to Tammy.
Just go play with Claude Cowork. And here's the thing. The same functionality is going to come to ChatGPT. The same functionality is going to come to Gemini. It might already be there in some function, in some ways. But go watch YouTube videos of use cases of where people are, and then go on LinkedIn and share what you're doing, because I think that's how we learn together as well. Like, and if you are finding value in it, tell us how you're using it, because I'd love to share that with our audience too. It'd be great.
I
This
like
is
it.
that watershed moment, my friend. It's a game
And
changer.
but that also means, and then we'll wrap this segment. Wait and see is no longer a strategy. It's time to get off the sideline and get involved.
No, the Titanic is going down. You don't have time to wait to see what the next song is from the orchestra, right? You gotta get in that lifeboat. This is a lifeboat.
Yep.
Yeah.
I like it.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I'm super excited. And I'll be honest, I haven't used it nearly as much as my team has. I'm just seeing the end product of what they're producing and how quickly they are. You know, we've got other projects that are just popping up, and what would have taken 4 meetings in 2 weeks to figure out a full strategy. We had one today. We've got Beech Tree Nourishment happening in our location right now. It's been going on for a couple of months, but it's hitting our sort of main area where the hotels, and I don't know if you've ever seen what Beech Tree Nourishment looks like, but there's basically this big machine off like quarter of a mile off the coast that pulls sand up from under the ocean and pipes it back to the ocean, and they spray it out. And like, this is from when we had a storm like 6 years ago, and then you get federal money to help do some beach renourishment. And every coastal destination has to do this every now and again. It's kind of disruptive. It takes about 1,000 feet of beach out for like a 2 day period as they move up the thing. So if you're a hotel and 2,000 feet around your hotel, the beach is closed for 2 days, that's a problem. That's disruptive to your guests, right? So how do you communicate that to everyone? So given all this disparate information, how do we pull it together in a succinct way with a communication strategy to let the hotels know and give them a toolkit to let their guests know and the city comms people to know? That would have been a multi-person, multiple-hour project to figure that all out. Literally, less than 10 minutes, we had the full thing mapped out.
I think that speaks to, from at least from a leadership perspective in your organization, the fact that the adoption is coming bottom up instead of top down, and you're not having to force everybody to use it. I think that's a big indicator of how you've empowered your team, and I like hearing that. That's good.
Well, shout out to Diane, because she's really been the driver of this. But I think the culture within our organization, you know, it goes back to when we first started using ChatGPT. We used to do that stand-up meeting thing once a week, and one of the agenda items was, how did you use AI this week to improve your ability to do your job? And we shared, and we sort of competed, but we also got excited for each other, and we learned from each other. We've restarted that with this now. So
I love it.
this is just contagious, you know. When people see how excited, like Melissa today literally said, she said, "I don't think I've ever been happier in my life," is what she said today. I mean,
No
there's a little
way.
hyperbole there, but the unlock that it's created, she's only
Yeah.
been using it for like 3 or 4 days, and it's
Well,
that much of a game changer.
what if is no longer an imaginary question? You can just, what if has an answer now?
Yeah. You imagine it, you can execute it. It's insane. Yeah. All right. Sorry. I know I'm on my
No, I
soapbox,
like
but
it.
it's
It's fun.
we gotta tell the industry, dude. We have to tell the industry. All right. So what's
Think
your
we just
topic, man?
did.
Okay. Because everyone in the industry listens to this. Hey, I
Of
got an
course
idea.
it.
Why doesn't everyone that is listening to this go share this to all their friends and coworkers, right? We'll get our listenership up. We'll save the industry. It'd be great. Win-win.
In fact, the first project that you should give your Claude Cowork agent is to go listen to all the episodes of our show so it can be smart.
Yeah. And get a transcript. Yeah. There you go. Awesome. What's
Well,
the topic, man?
so I want to talk a little bit about how my brain is thinking about paid media, because I think I have identified the disconnect that has caused me to hate on paid media as much as I have over the last several years. And I feel like I can articulate it now in such a way that hopefully will help all of our listeners think about how they're leveraging paid media. And this is not an anti-paid media discussion. In fact, it's quite the opposite. It's, I think I've unlocked, at least in my brain, what I feel like is the way to think about paid media in today's attention economy. So,
all right. So can I, before you do, can I
yes.
sort of restate where you've gone on your journey for
Yeah.
the audience that isn't necessarily familiar with you? Like from when we first met, what, 3, 4 years ago, and had conversations around owned media, you were very much of the opinion paid media should shrink dramatically and owned media should gobble that up. And paid media was dead almost, right? That was sort of one of the things. And then you evolved.
As it was
right?
being used, yeah.
As it was being used, right? Bad paid media, right? The commodity of paid media. Then you sort of evolved and said, well, we sort of need paid media to drive the engine, but owned media is still the goat, right? And then you sort of shifted from there more recently to where, well, earned media is really, really important. And that's maybe where the opportunity is, but we need owned and paid to sort of drive that, right? Is that fair?
Well, I probably want to push back on the third thing. And the reason I say that is not like the reason I talked about the value and importance of earned media is not because I felt like it got more attention, but because the LLMs were prioritizing earned media in the search results in the LLMs or the question and answer results. And because of that, I think earned media budgets needed to increase. But I'm not necessarily saying that my view on the value of it has shifted in that I don't value owned media anymore or I don't value paid media anymore. It's just that I feel like everybody needs to put additional focus on earned media because of the results in the LLMs. And I just want to finish the response there that you're definitely illustrating that my opinions have evolved over time. And I think the whole point of this show is to help people understand how to evolve with the circumstances, with the times that we're in, because everything has evolved over the last 3 or 4 years. And I'm trying to stay on top of it and evolve with it, as opposed to getting just stuck in an opinion and staying there.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it does make sense. So a critic would say, well, what you're saying is you've gone through saying we should spend more money on owned to we should spend as much money on earned to we should spend on paid. So we just need to spend more money on media in general. That's sort of the straw man. But I think what you're illustrating is everything around us is changing so rapidly that old adage of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results is actually flipped 180 degrees now. In doing the same thing and expecting the same results is idiotic at this point because you're not going to get the same results.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think I have some explanation of why I think it's been the way that it's been and hopefully how to help people think about it differently and evolve with the circumstances. So should I jump in?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yeah, because we've used 45 minutes at the hour we have allotted, and we've only at this point. So
okay, so first of all, I believe that we have fully now moved into the attention economy. And what I mean by that is people have more options for media consumption than they ever have. And as a result, it is more difficult to get their attention than it ever has been. And the way attention was grabbed in the past, it used to be interruption-based, and you could easily run an ad when somebody's watching one of the media options that are out there or consuming in some other way and get their attention. That is the fact that you pay to be in front of somebody is no longer value enough for them to pay attention. And so awareness used to be what we were trying to generate. Awareness is no longer enough because we're in the attention economy. So because of that, it's been really, really difficult to look at paid media, especially the way it's been used, and say that it's actually going to generate attention. And so when we think about this and the way that it's been used historically, what it's resulted in is the way we're structuring our budgets is not conducive to the attention economy. At the beginning of the year, most destinations are building a media budget, and they're doing that in conjunction with their agencies. The agencies, in most cases, are consulting very deeply on how should our media budget be spent. And we're essentially line iteming out, here's how much we're going to pay on billboards. Here's how much, or excuse me, how much we're going to spend on billboards. Here's how much we're going to spend on, digital ads, programmatic, all the different media activities, right? And then, of course, there's a PR budget and there's the content creation budget. But usually, the way that's structured is that the creative activities happen at the beginning of the year or the beginning of the budget cycle in some way, shape, or form. So for you, I know that you guys created the ads with the news people on the beach, and it was kind of a fun little spoof on a newscast. For the life of me, I've talked about this and I know exactly what the campaign is, but I can't remember the name of the campaign off the top of my head. So I'm sorry. Remind me the name of that campaign.
Now I'm going to let you keep scrambling and see if you can come up with it.
Is it? It's better at the beach. Is that what it was?
Nope.
Or yep. All right. Well, I'm just gonna keep moving. So you guys did that creative at the beginning of the year, and the media plan was built to distribute that creative that happened at the beginning of the year, and that happens in a lot of destinations. But in the attention economy, what that means is the amount of eggs that we're placing in the basket of the creative that we don't know whether or not it's actually going to get attention. That's a really scary proposition. We're also doing broadcast spots in a lot of cases. When I say we, I'm not including you in this. I'm just saying destinations for the most part are doing their broadcast level spots at the beginning of the year, coming up with what their annual slogan's going to be and all this kind of stuff. And it results in somewhat of an overconfidence in a creative message that is unproven. And with everything changing as fast as it does, maybe that message only works for the first half of the year or whatever. And it results in fixed media budgets that don't allow us to be very nimble. So I guess the thing that I would like to communicate to people, my premise of this argument is I believe that when we're thinking about budgets, we need to change to where our content budget should be specifically designed around getting attention. That means that we need to do high volume, high variety content that's lower production value. Why? Because it's unproven. But if we do high volume, high variety, a whole bunch of different types of content, and then we see what gets attention, then paid media should be a bucket that is not divided into 100 different line items. Instead, it should be the bucket that we use to scale attention once it's achieved. So, for example, if I run a fun creative video that's shot on iPhone that goes viral on TikTok, now I want to seed that with paid media to scale that content on TikTok. But that same content may not get a ton of attention on Instagram or YouTube Shorts or whatever. So what I need to do is test high volume, high variety content on each of those platforms and start scaling with paid media what we know is getting attention. So paid media is more of a big bucket with that's not so defined and line itemed out, but instead is prepared and ready that when something gets attention, we're going to scale that attention. And then our job is to convert that attention to trust and ultimately visitation once we get it. That means our retargeting budget on each platform, like YouTube, when somebody watches our videos, we should retarget the heck out of them. On Meta, same thing. Website, same thing. And so the whole idea is there should be a consistent monthly content budget that allows us to capture high volume, high variety content. Paid media is there and ready to scale attention once it's achieved. And then the rest of that media strategy is to convert that attention from attention to trust and ultimately visitation. And I think that's a much more effective use of paid media in today's attention economy than structuring our paid media on an annual basis with our agency. We all decided where that money's going by media channel at the beginning of the year. And I know that there's some nimbleness that happens in a lot of destinations. There's shifting of budgets, but it's more of an exception, not the rule. And I would like to see media, paid media, be leveraged to scale attention instead of it being such a fixed asset.
Okay. Let me see if I can restate that a little bit just to make sure I understand what you're
Sure.
saying. So, and I might ask a couple of questions. So, are you saying that we should take like an actual line item in our budget, in our media mix, and say, call that content amplification or something like that, and have that as a budget? Now, that doesn't necessarily, replace the other stuff. It's just we're accounting for it separately, so that's a deliberate new piece of our media mix. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that the majority of your media budget at this point should be leveraged to
Today,
scale
so you'd flip a switch.
attention.
You wouldn't scale this to, because it sounds very experimental, right? There's a lot of risk because there's a lot of unknowns, right?
Yeah, I
I
mean,
sort of have benchmarks on how I'm performing based on a pretty traditional media mix that's been fairly consistent, but has iteratively changed over time. And what you're saying is a dramatic wholesale switch without any guarantees that it's going to be effective.
When I say a generic wholesale switch, like I'm not saying right now it's March 27th today, and by April 15th you better have all your media budget in that scaling attention bucket, right? That's not what I mean. What I mean is I would definitely be planning in preparation for next year to look at my budget differently and to not line
But why
item it
wouldn't you
out in the
start
same
with
way.
like 10, 20% of your budget and pull a little bit out of programmatic, a little bit out of,
Oh, I think that's the smart
TV,
thing
a
to
little bit
do.
of, okay.
Yeah,
Is
I think
that why
so.
you're
One.
suggesting the opposite? Because this would be the smart thing to do? Because you're saying like just drop all your other things and go all in on this.
I don't mean drop all your other things. I'm saying that money that's spent on a specific media channel better have proven attention-getting creative behind it. Because right now, what's happening, for example, let's just say
Sure.
broadcast TV, for example. Right now, we're spending money on the campaign that was decided at the beginning of the year, and we don't know how well it resonates just yet. So what I would do is leverage my attention scaling budget, and once something is getting attention, boom, that's what I'm putting on the media channels that I was running my existing creative on before.
So what you're describing is very bananable, right? And what I mean by that, this is what Jesse at Savannah Bananas has just talked about, how they test what they're going to do, right? They'll run stuff on their socials, see what's working, and then that's what they lean in on, right? So that's what you're sort of talking about, going to this more
Yes.
scrappy experimental approach.
Yes, but I'm trying to redefine paid media's role in that process because you cannot do banana ball if all of your media is already decided by channel.
Yeah, it's tough, right? And I think, like when we're doing, and we don't always do the best job of this, but when we're creating creative, right? There's multiple ways we sort of stress test it, right? Well, some is intuition, expertise, historical data, but we're also running variants and A/B testing and multivariate testing certain things in real time quite often to see which one's gonna perform the best, but it's based on a schedule and a budget that's already set. Like the risk in what you're saying is, I really don't like, I could go a month and none of the content I put out there resonates, and I end up amplifying little to none of it, right? And then
Yeah.
that's going to cause a whole bunch of problems, or the reverse, where it's like, oh, this thing's doing so well, I'm going to put all my budget in it, and now I've got zero left for the next month, right? So the reason we budget the way we do is there's assumptions being made, right? One is it's better to be always on in our case than on and off and having gaps, right? Just persistency is important, right? That's better than being bit part. I also have the assumption that a variety of touch points is better than linear, right? I could go all in on one channel. I could put all my money in TV, or my best performing, but I might hit saturation or point of diminishing returns. But even if I don't, I still believe a balanced media mix over the long time is a more effective way, right? So I'm making certain assumptions in terms of how I plan out, which I wouldn't necessarily be able to make in this new model. Like that fundamentally limits my ability to do that.
Yeah, in a sense, I see what you're saying. I got a little high centered on the two options you gave me, right? Where you're like, option one is if something gets no attention, then I'm not spending any of that paid media budget, and there's a problem. I think my counter to that would be, wouldn't that be better than paying a ton of money to something that doesn't amplifying something that doesn't get attention, right? And then
Maybe
the
until my
flips.
stakeholders come and say, why didn't you advertise this month, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, what I'm saying, you have to test into it either way. And so I agree with you that like going 100% in this paid media model that I'm describing from March to April doesn't make a ton of sense. However, I've seen a lot of destination marketing budgets, and I'll tell you, 90% of them have very little versatility or ability to be nimble to scale attention. There's got to be a bucket there to capitalize on attention, and there's got to be more investment on high volume, high variety content to see what gets attention, because we are over investing on whatever our creative idea was that we leveraged for the campaign. You're fortunate because you've got the budget where you can probably come up with a few different ideas or campaigns and stress test those against each other. 90% of destinations pick a concept, and that's the annual campaign.
Yeah, I think it's tough for me because I am in this sort of, I guess, ivory tower of Visit Myrtle Beach, right? We're not typical. We got great partners that are doing very sophisticated stuff. We had a meeting with some city council folks yesterday, and one of them was asking me, "Well, what's the campaign? What campaign are you running? Can I see the ad?" Right? Very singular minded. I'm
Yeah.
like, "All right, we're gonna have to do some education here." So I took literally 30 minutes breaking down how we think about markets, how we think about target audiences, how we think about personas, how we think about like different types of messaging. And like literally by the end of it, I'd broken down and sort of iterated or illustrated to him. We literally have thousands of different campaigns and creatives running at any given time, some of which we don't even, a human never actually sees, right? We're running these tests. Where AI is choosing what verbiage or what color or what image to put in based on propensity to book or something like that. So it's not like in the old days where I've got like one ad and that's what everyone sees. It's way more diluted than that now.
Yeah, and you're a little bit the exception, not the rule. Now, I don't want to say, I know there's a lot of destinations that are testing content and doing a high variety of stuff, so I don't mean to say that. But I don't think very many destinations have the luxury of making multiple campaign concepts and testing
Yeah,
them against each
fair.
other. Most people are
Totally
working
fair.
with a singular annual budget.
All right, so let's do that. I'm going to push back from like I'm one of those
Yeah.
more standard DMOs, right? I would argue I'm already doing what you're saying because I'm boosting posts on Facebook, you know. I'm shifting money on YouTube to the videos that are getting more engagement. I'm doing some of what you're talking. So how is what you're suggesting
Well,
different?
for one, you're not creating near the volume and variety of content needed to actually see what's getting attention. And that's because you front-loaded your creative budget at the beginning of the year based on what your campaign idea was. We're overinvesting on production quality at the beginning of the year for an unproven, untested concept. I think the content budget
Yeah,
needs to
I'd
be
agree.
consistent throughout the entire year, allowing you to do high volume, high variety throughout the year, and then leverage paid media as you get attention.
So that I agree with. I think we over rely on that sort of that beautiful centerpiece video, whatever it is. You know, go spend 50, 100, $250,000 to produce this perfect 30 seconds. And what you're saying is, don't worry about that. Spend that $100,000 to produce 100 different types of video,
Yes.
right? Okay.
Yes. and then
100%.
figure out
And
how to push that out. Yeah.
then
Well,
if
and
you want to
AI
do a
makes that a lot
broadcast,
easier than it used to, right? You can
oh
produce
yeah.
stuff, you can storyboard, you can script, you can even actually create the video a lot more cost effectively. The cost of creative is going to approach zero at some point, right? It's not quite there yet. Like you could technically make a good 30-second spot with AI. I wouldn't recommend it quite yet. But we're probably a year or two away from that being a reality where I could, what would have cost me $250,000 or $100,000 is now going to cost me essentially zero. But we can also go out with an iPhone and talk to our visitors at a close to zero cost, right? And
Yep.
produce 100 videos in a day. And that's going to
And
be just
compare those
fine.
two and what's getting more attention on social media right now. By
Yeah.
a long shot, the man on the street versus the beautiful broadcast spot.
Yeah. I think that's the other challenge I have with what you're saying though a little bit is it's true for social media. I mean, what you're saying, I can see how it plays for social media, but it doesn't necessarily translate to every other channel that I might be trying to reach my audience on.
Possibly, but you have more indication that it gets attention on those other platforms through social media than you do by just relying on the assumptions that you're such a brilliant creative that what you came up with at the beginning of the year was going to be incredibly effective.
Yeah. Well, the other thing we should be doing is whether it be in real time with real people or some kind of virtual version of this, but we should be focus grouping or litmus testing or getting some kind of feedback on the creative all
Yeah.
the time, right? We shouldn't
People
be
lie in focus
arrogant,
groups,
you
but
know.
yes.
Yeah. What's that?
People lie in focus groups, but yes. Like,
They
I
do, but
think.
I think there's ways you can get signal back, right? There's
Yeah.
even, I mean, Brad Dean used to do this at Myrtle Beach. When we'd create a new TV commercial, they would use the dials that they use during political debates, you know, to say how you're feeling about a candidate where they're talking. They would use those dials with people to watch the commercials and change their mood. Is it positive? Is it negative? And they found an amazing, I think I've talked about this on the show before, but they found this amazing insight that for the female demographic, when they showed golf in these commercials, it went really negative because in their head, they're saying, well, and this is a different time. This is 20 years ago, but they'd be like, well, my husband's going to leave me and go play golf. I don't want that. So they ended up making that creative decision, even though we're the golf capital of the world. When they're doing their regular family consumer, leisure consumer videos, we don't put golf in it anymore. Well, we didn't at that time. We've started to
Yeah.
introduce it a little more. But those are the kind of insights I think you can get by sort of testing creative and testing
Yeah,
messaging
so
and testing.
and even then though, and I'm sorry to keep pushing back on you, but even then, maybe you're giving them three options and they're deciding which one of the three was most interesting or resonated most with them. If on social media, if you give them 100 options and you see based on their actual interactions and performance, what gets the attention and what they actually stay and watch, I think you're much more likely to have a big win than the way we're currently doing it in the space.
So how do you measure success on this, right? Is the, because I could argue that you're going to optimize towards views, likes, things like that,
I think it has a
which,
lot more
you
to do
know,
with shares,
even
comments,
shares,
saves.
right? But you could share for a negative reason, right?
Sure.
But your target cannot be social eyeballs because that doesn't necessarily translate into people actually thinking positively about you. It doesn't translate into think people considering you. It doesn't translate into people actually booking and visiting your destination necessarily.
No, I mean, but you're competing against eyeballs on a TV campaign or on an outdoor campaign. I
Sure,
think.
but typically you'd measure beyond that, right? Like with a TV campaign, we'll never just run a TV campaign and report on the impressions. We'll also run a brand lift study along with that, right? Or
Right.
a closed loop study to see how many of the people that were exposed versus a control group ended up coming, right? Or we'll use arrival list or something like that if it's digital. So we're also optimizing over the long term for real tangible metrics, not
Yeah.
vanity metrics.
And
So
you can do
the
the
risk is you're not.
similar studies, similar data capture to generate some of those metrics that you need to decide whether or not it's being successful. In the end,
visitation and probably length of stay for a lot of destinations that might be optimizing for that versus volume. I think you could still measure a lot of that stuff with this type
Yeah.
of a
You
campaign.
just got to be careful though. This came up a couple of weeks ago on the show. I forget who said Matt Steich or something, but when a measure becomes a target, it's no longer a useful measure, right? So if we're trying to optimize and boost because it's getting so many shares, that doesn't necessarily translate to operational success. So
Yeah, I
I think
guess
you
I
just got
just
to be
have the
careful.
same argument for the alternative.
Yeah, but the difference is we're doing it longitudinally, right? So we're sort of, we have the time to measure some of that impact. Whereas what you're suggesting is you're moving fast, you're being scrappy, you're doing this on the fly in near real time. You may not have enough time to measure the full impact. So you're going to only optimize for those vanity metrics. You're not going to have the time to optimize for the other stuff.
Yeah, I know we're out of time, so I'm gonna limit my pushback on even what you just said. But I think that's very figure outable. I think that's
Yeah.
a smaller issue than maybe you're making it sound.
Okay. Well, and I think it's because it's new, right? I think there's always an inertia around what we're doing today is working. The reality we live in is a result of the systems we have in place. And so
Yep.
any deviation from those systems creates a change that we cannot necessarily predict. And so the risky thing is to do that in a wholesale way that could be negatively disruptive or positively disruptive. We've got to make sure we mitigate the downside risk of that. So my recommendation is I actually like the concept, and it's certainly one we are beginning to deploy a little bit, but I would encourage our audience to not necessarily go all in two-footed on this tomorrow. I would say, like, let's put 10% or 20% of your budget behind this concept.
Yeah. I think for smaller DMOs, my recommendation is you can either continue to emulate the plan of those that are better funded than you, or you can try something completely different, because the only place where smaller DMOs are going to win is either on the uniqueness of the experience or the ability to move quicker than the incumbent. And so to continue to do it the way it's always been done, it's wearing me out just thinking about it. So I think smaller destinations have got to take a risk, and I think this is a risk worth taking.
That's fair. And they have the ability, capability to do this now, especially with tools like Claude
Yep.
Cowork, that they couldn't have done it necessarily. If you're a one, two person, like this, the idea of this, if I was just a one person shop, would be overwhelming. But now, if I'm a one person shop that has an army of agents and coworkers, I can do this. This is within reach now. It's a reality.
Yep.
So that's cool, man. I appreciate it. I like that feistiness today. I got to tell you, I think it was.
We went back to our roots with debate.
I'd like to bring it back. We've had a couple of folks criticize some recent episodes saying we went easy on the guests. So I guess we should bring back some of the discourse to Destination Discourse if you're
Yeah.
game.
I'm in.
Awesome. All right, Adam, people want to find out more from you. Where can they do that?
Yeah, you can reach me, Adam, at thebrandrevolt.com. Find me on LinkedIn, or of course on Tourism IQ.
And you can find me, Stuart.Butler@visitmontebeach.com or on LinkedIn. And guys, we really appreciate you listening. Please drop a like, subscribe, all that fun stuff. We may even put some paid media behind it. I'm just kidding. We have no budget. This is purely sweat equity. But until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
I didn't say thanks,
Actually,
everybody. I
you
didn't.
didn't. That's all right.
Yeah.
That's all
It's
right.
funny because the sound was playing in my head, that ding 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 ding. And
What is that?
isn't that the little music that plays at the end?